Behind Big Brother podcast.
It's day 53, and joining us today is our very special guest, Tim Brunero. You may remember him from last year's Big Brother. Say hi, Tim.
G'day, guys. How are you going?
Good. How are you?
Very good. I'm a big fan, so it's very exciting to speak to you.
Great.
We're not going to pretend to be professional interviewers or anything.
Because so we're not.
We'll just grab your, first of all, your impressions on Big Brother this year so far.
Well, what I love about Big Brother this year is there seems to be really distinct factionalism going on. Now, I called this about a week and a half ago, and I labelled the groups the Young'uns and the Statesmen. Since then, of course, it's sort of hit the headlines a little bit, and watching on Sunday and Monday night, it's something that everyone's talking about. But this Katie, John, Jamie faction versus Rob and Dave, I find really interesting. And before Monday, they had 27 votes, Jamcat and John, and they devoted a whole 17 to Rob and Dave, and Rob wasn't even up or eligible in one of those weeks. So I've been watching it, and of course now it's really out. And for someone who's sort of picked it that long ago, to see what's happening this week in terms of us literally for the first time voting against the king and queen of BBO6 and David, it's very exciting.
And who do you think your pick will be to go?
Well, look, I really am very concerned because David's my person in the house. I really like David. He's mature. He's a thinking person. He's got a lot more to show us in terms of telling us about his travel and, you know, he's a member of the National Party and he's a gay man. So, you know, someone calling him on that and saying, can you please explain how you can be that? And so there's so much I sort of feel like I want to know about David. And he's playing the game so well, you know, he listens and he watches. But I also think he's getting a bit grumpy in the house. I think he might go because I think that Jamie and Katie are just such the king and queen.
Yeah, well, the public is definitely going to be either, you know, we'll break them up because it'll be funny, or we'll just kick David out because of the fact that we want to see Jamie and Katie together because they're so good together. So, it could go either way as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yes. I mean, this will be the first time in Big Brother where I will literally be there Sunday night, an hour before the show starts, popcorn, Coke, you know what I mean? Like, really sort of...
have everything set up and ready.
Yeah, yeah, like, really, really, really interested in what's going on. Because these three are obviously the biggest personalities in the house, I think you can pretty safely say.
Yeah, well, there'll be major changes. If whoever goes, there's going to be major, you know, divisions in the house. Because if David goes, that's, like, a big part of this, you know, faction that you've been talking about. And if Jamie or Katie go, that's another part of sort of John's side, the group that's John, that John is in. So it's going to be really interesting the weeks, you know, after this eviction.
I think so. And look, I must admit, Katie has been very popular for a long time, and I really think that, okay, she's young, but she really has let us know.
And she's from Perth. Don't forget that.
No, I know that, but what she's done is, and I think she was popular at school. You know, it says so in her bio on the official Big Brother website, which is not the best website on Big Brother out there. you know, the truth is that she has swanned into the nominations in the last 2 weeks prior to this week with so much cheekiness and arrogance. Like, everyone else is real biting their nails, worried about getting a strike or a nomination point for not doing it properly. And she just sort of swaggers in. She knows she's the most popular. She knows she's got Jamie. She knows she's the centre of attention. And to be honest, that's annoyed me a little bit. And to watch her squirming last night when she was nominated, I mean, I don't wish that upon anyone, but I think it's all very well to sail along and be everyone's friend in the Big Brother house when things are good. But when things are bad, you see, you've got to understand that when you're nominated, it's a huge thing psychologically. You've got to deal with that all week. And so they've been swanning around being the king and queen. And to some extent, I feel a little bit of satisfaction that they now will have to go through a week and know what it's like and know the pressure of possibly leaving the house.
Yeah, well, it's good also because none of these housemates have been up for eviction. So they get, you know, a feel of what everyone else has been feeling. They don't know. And now, you know, even the ones who don't get evicted, they know what it's like to be nominated now. So they're like a level playing field with the other housemates that have been nominated.
But you don't think with one of these three going, it might make the house a little more boring because they're all the main personalities in the house at the moment.
Oh, I think it will. That doesn't mean I'm not excited to see which one of them will go. I think David may have been up before, but certainly Jamie and Katie haven't. And I just sort of think that, I mean, look, I don't have anything against them. I think that they're both interesting people. I think Jamie is playing the game very well. He's creating plot lines. He's kept himself in the limelight by going out with Katie. You know, but I just think some of the arrogance showing through. Like the other was a double eviction, and they knew it was a double eviction. He's sitting up there with no shirt on and a pair of red underpants over his black shorts, and then starts crying when one of the boys gets kicked out. It was just sort of bizarre, either bizarre or incredibly conceited, you know. And I think Australians will punish. Australians punish tall poppies. Australians punish people who, you know, go around telling everyone how cool he's in the cool group. Like, Australians don't like that. They like people who are understated. And I think that Jamie, the more we see of him and the more, you know, bleach we apply to his sort of persona, the more, as we scrub back, we'll see that he's not what we hope that he might be, you know? I think he's I just think he's a little bit of a poser, and he's a little bit of a... he's not what, you know, the 12-year-old girls necessarily think he is.
So I have to ask you as well, because this is a topic that's still being brought up, the whole Gretel Michael thing. And I know that you weren't too terribly supportive of Gretel on this in your last podcast with Michael. So could you elaborate on that?
Oh, I can. Look, I mean, these podcasts I've been doing at 3digitalcontent.com, they're just amazing because what seems to happen is I get them. And because it's me and because we do a quite in-depth interview, they open up quite a lot. I mean, we had Anna saying, you know, Karen's uninterested in a boob job and she's very shallow and, you know, Crystal's obsessed with makeup and food. And, you know, we had Elise calling Michael a knob and, you know, sort of, they really sort of open up. We had Kate in last week just telling us about how, you know, hot dogs in Vesna are living together in Melbourne. So we've had a few, and of course, Michael telling us all about how Karen's a gold digger. It's fantastic when you actually get to interview all these people and sort of see where they're coming from. Look, I initially was quite anti-Michael when he came out. I thought he was very defensive, very unhappy, and I don't think he played that Sunday night eviction very well. But by the time Monday rolled around, it became quite obvious that Gretel really had to be in a bonnet about it. And not so much Gretel, but just Big Brother and Gretel not realising that they really did give him a bad set of cards. You know, like they really did make it difficult for him in the first couple of weeks. I mean, it's hard enough going into the Big Brother house, actually incredibly stressful. And then to suddenly be in there and not have any chance to ease in, just to be constantly having to play tricks on people. I mean, I think he went a bit crazy. But I do think that that Gretel, you know, and I think Big Brother is going very hard this year and has got to acknowledge that they're doing that. Do you know what I mean? That they've changed the show. It's not Big Brother, it's Survivor. They've got all these people in there admitting that they want to get the money. Ashley, you know, Rob, Karen, outright saying, I want to win the money. No one did that last year. So they've changed the dynamic of the show. They want people in there. They want it to be Survivor and all tactics and stuff. But they don't want to acknowledge that Big Brother's got meaner and stuff to manipulate more. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. Do you think he's actually gotten meaner, though?
Oh, look, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, you start that first week, you've got revenge rooms, you've got, you know, punishment rooms, electric shocks. I think he's been...
Scary tasks that aren't scary.
Yeah, not really the scary tasks. I think just, you know, not allowing anyone to ease into the house. I think Michael's got a really, you know, real sort of poison chalice with the insider task, which eventually, you know, brought him unstuck. I just think that this year's Big Brother is a different kettle of fish. He definitely is meaner and he wants to provoke more reactions, and that's fine, but he's just not got a... You can't be in denial about that fact, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you've got to either be doing it and admitting that you're doing it, you know, or not do it at all. You can't take both sides of the story with it.
Exactly. Well, that's exactly right.
And when you were talking to Michael, because I know he's gone to a lot of sort of the mainstream press, and he's still very anti-Gretel. I know on FM, I think it was, he was totally bagging her out. Was there sort of anti-Gretel resentment when he was talking to you for your podcast?
I think he'd sort of got over that. I don't think he was... I think he was deconstructing it and talking to me as someone who has been through Big Brother and knows something of it. I mean, it's a bit of a brotherhood, the people who've actually been on the show, because you sort of, you know, you sort of have been through that similar experience. I don't think he was quite like that when I spoke to him. But I think, you know, Gretel was very hard on him. And I think what people don't understand about Big Brother is, right, when you see them on day one, the housemates, right, they have spent 4 months, right, living on adrenaline and hope, right? They have gone to second or third auditions, had to take days off and travel to the second auditions. They've had questionnaires, they've had psych profiling, they've had medical tests, they've had so many photo shoots, they've done so much stuff just to get there. they've had a week's notice, they've been flown up the Gold Coast, they've been locked in a room for 5 days in a hotel, they've had more photo shoots, more stress. Finally, they get on the show. No wonder they're absolutely exhausted once they get there. Now, you put someone, I'm in the first week, it's just coming off sugar and stuff, guys. You know what I mean? Like, basic stuff like that. For the first 2 weeks, I had headaches, I was grumpy. You know, I lost it at Angela and Michelle about Plaster of Paris in the first week's task. I remember throwing the kiddies' bike in the Friday night games. You know, all these things that I wouldn't usually
do. Great viewing, though, and, we must admit.
Yeah, well, that's right. But to suddenly give Michael, on top of all that stress that everyone's got, an insider task, which means that he's throws his whole game plan out to start off with, and makes it very hard for him to ease into the house because he's playing tricks on everyone. I think that is a much harder ask, because that never happened last year. No one was singled out for that kind of treatment.
But it was sort of their reasoning behind it was that he said he would do anything to win the money. So do you think he sort of somewhat brought it upon himself by saying that?
Look, I think that there's something in that. However, I also think that he was portrayed by... I mean, he didn't even get an hour to prepare himself. Big Brother didn't call him in and go, right, look, I'm going to reveal that you've been lying about having a son, so just prepare yourself for it. He was totally just set adrift. If he'd been the insider for the whole time or something like that, maybe it would have been a bit different. But I really think that he became our plaything, you know? And no, I really don't think that he had a good deal. I think that he went a bit crazy. But having been in the house, I know what it would be like to suddenly be given this task and then be just dropped in it, you know, after 3 or 4 weeks. I mean, everyone's impression of you is totally based on all these lies and things that you've been doing and telling and stuff. So, you know, I do think that he got a rough deal. And then Gretel's on stage, you know, sort of trying... I mean, Gretel didn't even know that he had no choice about being the insider, did she?
No, she was she was left out of the loop in that one.
Now, you know, I think she's either in denial or losing interest in, you know, the contract she has. But, I mean, you've at least got to understand that, you know, this is a different year. He was given a really tough set of cards to play, you know, and he was totally vindicated, wasn't he? When we saw the footage of the kiss, it wasn't a kiss, was it?
No, definitely, yeah, it wasn't a kiss.
And okay, there might not have been another camera angle available, but the fact is that it looked like a kiss, and they may never have called it a kiss, but... You know, we're not talking about, you know, lawyers in a courtroom here arguing about, you know, words and exact definitions and things. But the fact was, it looked like a kiss. Everyone thought that they had kissed, but they hadn't. And so he was totally vindicated by that. And all he said was, I mean, he said to me, look, on Monday I went out to try and have a laugh and have fun. And I made this offhand comment about, you know, it being a good piece of editing. And she just went off, she just went crazy. Now, I'm not saying that Michael wasn't, you know, look, the first piece I wrote on Michael was that he's damaged by the show. If you go, I do a blog on who.com. And I wrote a piece called, you know, Michael Needs Counselling, you know? Michael Needs Counselling. You know, he went manic. He went crazy. He talked too much. He went into verbal diarrhea mode because he had no chance to settle in. And you know, my mum's a psychologist, you know, and she said to me on the quiet, she said, look, you know, I'm a little bit worried about Michael. You know, like he genuinely has, you know, gone a bit crazy.
When you come out of the show, do you get that sort of psychological help from people if you need it? So in the case of Michael, you think, would he have access to that kind of thing through Big Brother, or would it be all to his own?
I think, unfortunately, the mad bad world of television stuff is that it means that he pretty much has to look after himself. You know, and the more I find out about Michael, the more interesting a character he is. I know he lives out of home, but I know that he hasn't seen his mother since he left the show. And his father's, you know, on a book tour. So it seems to me that Michael is quite an interesting character in that he's quite alone. He lives a world which is, you know, basically dominated by himself and his own self-reliance. And what we've seen is he's a more fragile character than he would like to think, you know? He's battling to keep up this facade of strength and you know, one of the questions I gave him was, how do you cope with all this negativity? You know, you've basically... What I'm saying is, he's on the right track. What he's thinking is right. He basically is right in saying, this was terrible, I was really set up, and, you know, I wasn't allowed to enjoy the show and come out happy and fun, and, you know, I was really set up and given a rough set of cards, and I don't like that, and I'm going to tell everyone I don't like that, and that makes Big Brother squirm a little bit, but Big Brother is so powerful, you know, in terms of being Channel 10 and the whole lot, that they can actually, you know, make it into just a controversial, interesting thing, which piques people's interest in the show, you know what I mean? So he's never going to win.
So for you, for instance, on the finale show, you're standing on stage, the Logans just got their check, and Gretel tells the audience she doesn't know if the show will be back for another year. What happens then? Are you taken off stage and told what the public perception is, or what happens?
Well, I think what basically happens is you are... I mean, Greg and I were very different. We didn't have that proper debriefing that people get on stage with Gretel. We didn't get that sort of discussion. We didn't get to go back and look behind the scenes the next day, you know, at the control room and that sort of thing. We didn't get to do all those things. We didn't get to meet any of the cast and crew because we were you know, sent off around Australia for the tour of nightclubs, etc. You're basically on the way to the final destination, from Dreamworld to where the party was. You know, you sit with Carmel and she tells you some of the controversial things that have happened in the show. You know, for our year, it was things like all the sex and Kate getting thrown off for homophobia and a whole lot of things that you just have no idea what's happened. I mean, we didn't know Kate had been evicted because of those homophobic comments. So we didn't know a lot of these things, or that Shearer had been so made into the evil guy for kissing those, for kissing all the girls. I mean, you got to understand with Big Brother that some people are made into demons, you know what I mean? And I was fully aware of that when I went in there, that I could have come out having been painted as the bad guy. Now, I'm not saying that Glenn didn't kiss all the girls, right? He did. But, I mean, a 21-year-old guy, I mean, when girls want to kiss him, and he kissed him, that was his crime, basically. And yet he was made out to be this terrible person. You know, you have to realise, you know, when Kate came out, she had to defend herself for supposed homophobia. Or, you know, you've got to realise that as soon as you put yourself in that paradigm, you are the plaything of an enormous organisation, 200 cameramen, editors, producers, directors, you know, and you also are the plaything of all the media. Now, what amazes me about the media is, you're out of the show 2 months and they delight in calling you Big Brother trash or, you know, forgotten sort of, you know, rent a crowd, blah, blah, blah. But they've actually used you to sell so much advertising space wedged on their, you know, wedged between their talk slots on radio or in newspapers. How many column inches go to Big Brother people, you know? Like, this enormous industry is around these people. And they are constantly, you know, a lot of people make a lot of money out of them and basically treat them as little animals in a cage and you know, judge them and make fun of them and blah, blah, blah. You're actually very lucky if you come out, you know, relatively unscathed. You know, like I came out very well, you know, so did Greg. But how many people from our year did? You know, Dean was painted as the bad guy. You know what I mean? You know, Christy was the silly girl. There's a whole lot of people who came out looking silly, you know what I mean, or were made fun of rather than coming out with any kind of redeeming. So that's the nature of the show. And, you know, Gretel gives you a bit of Carmel on the way back gives you a little bit of a rundown stuff. But it's not the sort of deep psychological care that one might think. You know, this is a business and it's run quickly, you know, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am sort of thing.
How long does it take you after you leave the show or after, you know, you've done all the media appearance that to start integrating back into, you know, normal life and getting on with everything else again? How long did it take you?
Oh, look, I think for me, I mean, I'm still riding the wave.
Yeah.
To be honest, fellas, I mean, I still earn my bread out of Big Brother. I'm doing this video podcast at this website, freedigitalcontent.com, called Oh Brother. I'm doing a blog on the Who Weekly website. I do a blog on the Chaser website, chaser.com.au. So I'm doing all these things. I'm doing school speaking. I'm speaking in technical colleges to young Sparkies about work choices. I'm doing a lot of stuff with the unions. So I'm working very hard. And so I really haven't come off the wave and had a chance to have a month off and break, you know. So it's, you know, I think you've got to, and I'm really looking forward to having a month off and really looking back and actually trying to take stock of what's happened to me, and especially since and during Big Brother. But I think a lot of them, it takes about 3 or 4 months of drinking and kissing, and then they sort of go back to normal life.
Okay, well, thanks for coming onto the podcast, Tim.
Oh, mate, my pleasure. Absolutely my pleasure. I'm a huge fan, and I look forward to listening to it as I do all of yours on Behind Big Brother.
Thank you very much, thanks. And we definitely want you back in the future.
Oh, well, that's what all the girls say, and now that you've said it, I feel I feel like, you know, I'm extra special to everyone.
Okay, then. See you later.
Thanks, Tim.